according to what they have agreed, will not have to give any account to the Ecuadorian authorities, even if they commit the most cruel crimes.
Aunque cometan delitos de los más crueles, ninguno.
And they can walk freely in the country. That's the reality.
Esa es la realidad.
The weapons of Russian origin that were in Ecuador. What do you think about that?
¿Qué creen? Se lo pasó Noboa.
Noboa passed them under the Pentagon. That happened also to those of Chinese origin. All are to be sent to Ukraine. A Ukrainian plane belonging to Zelensky landed a few days ago in Quito.
Un avión ucraniano de Zelensky aterrizó hace pocos días en Quito. De cualquier manera,
in any case, sovereignty, independence, and social rights today have blatantly receded in Ecuador.
En forma descarada en Ecuador.
Ecuador is stopping to be a country and is becoming a factory. The problem for us, the Latin Americans, is that the United States is planning for the rest of our continent. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Eduardo Artes. Bien, hoy estamos con Irene.
Well, today we're with Irene Leon from Ecuador. Ecuadorian sociologist, political analyst, and member of the World Social Forum, WFS, since its inception in
2021.
Also a member of the Social Forum of the Americas and the Network of Intellectuals, Artists, and Social Movements in Defense of Humanity. Welcome to Black and White.
Bienvenida a Negro y Blanco.
Hello, I'm very happy to be with you in this program, and at this time, I'm at your service.
Irene, ¿qué pasa en Ecuador?
Irene, what is going on in Ecuador? What is the story of criminals and drug traffickers? Is there a power struggle in Ecuador? They attacked a television channel. The same thing is said about the social groups. In many cases, social organizations are accused of terrorism. The topic of conversation is not drug traffickers, but terrorists. What is the foundation of these issues? What is really going on in Ecuador?
Well, I think the key to this is the condition that Ecuador is in. Since more than 6 years ago, there was a promise of change in Ecuador, change and transformation of the country with a governance and project definition for the country and based on different dimensions of such issues. Ecuador wanted to implement socialism and good life, which has the support of the Constitution. Our Constitution is considered one of the most advanced constitutions in the world. Ecuador was once the second country in Latin America and the Caribbean, but since 6 years ago, the country has plunged into what I call a neoliberal coup. In other words, an attempt to restore neoliberalism to the country at any cost. Since then, our country has been grappling with legal war, political persecution, and judicial and media imposition based on some scenarios. In the end, all this case creates an environment in which politics, definition of the country and country management within the framework of the provisions of the Constitution remain only in words and on paper. Therefore, in the same period of time, with the opening of the market and the governance of the country, various centers of illegal capital have been established in the country to provide the basis for neoliberal actions. The main focus is close to financial capital because Ecuador is a dollarized country. Ecuador lost its national currency more than 20 years ago, and the U.S. dollar prevailed through Ecuador. Therefore, these conditions have prepared the ground for various money laundering operations and unauthorized transactions. In these transactions, financial capital is transferred. Therefore, this financial flow is related to illegal businesses and is known as Financial Capital Bank. It's very important that a turnaround has taken place in Ecuador and is taking place. In addition to illegal capital, there is the export sector, which is also very important, as well as the international trade sector, where there is also a possibility that illegal capital circulates in these sectors. Also, there are sections related to human trafficking and other trafficking, including drug trafficking. Therefore, I say all these issues to explain that this problem that exists is caused by the structural orientations of the country and the region. In this problem, the proceeds of these businesses, which are considered illegitimate, go into neoliberal and free market activities where different actors and sectors interact with each other, as I mentioned. As a part of these activities and shrinking the government, which is a part of neoliberalism, in Ecuador we see the transfer of power to powerful institutions, factual powers, that I mentioned. So all the trends that we're talking about, including attacks, drug trafficking, and a certain kind of violence that is seen, are caused by the opening of the market doors in Ecuador, the de-governance in the country, and the return of neoliberalism against the good life constitution in Ecuador. The constitution, contrary to this trend, defines Ecuador as a country with a multi-sector and diverse economy, whose production is also multi-sector and diverse. Ecuador plays a pivotal role in the structure of regional integration and Latin America and South America.
Yes, that's correct. We're going to take a short break. I think it became very clear that the root of this problem is the neoliberal system. We'll be back in a few seconds. We're back with Irene Leon from Ecuador in Black and White. Irene, so far we feel that the actions taken by the young Noboa government are a clear abuse of the true crime situation. You have explained this situation very well, how this situation is connected with large economic groups. Let's be frank that the goal of Noboa is to drag the country into the mouth of American imperialism, that is, to bring the American military and announcing it.
Porque la llegada de las tropas norteamericanas o los anuncios de las mismas.
How should be described the presence of Laura Richardson? What do these agreements mean? 124 projects are planned for this year, and it's supposed to last for 5 years.
24 actividades ya planificadas y van a estar 5 años. ¿No? ¿Cómo se fortalece la presencia militar, policial?
How will these actions strengthen the U.S. military and police presence? In addition to the Manta base issue and the Galapagos becoming some kind of natural aircraft carrier, it seems they're taking advantage of this economic crisis, a crisis of crime, economics, privatization, increased VAT, etc. What else is in this?
Económica, privatizaciones, subida del IVA, etc. ¿No hay algo más en esto?
I think you touched on one of the central issues that is happening in Ecuador. We're not alone in our own country, and part of what is happening is due to differences regarding the country's model and orientation at the domestic level, which is related to the international geopolitical environment. But the United States is a very important player that has a geostrategic agenda for the region as well, for Latin America. In this framework, Ecuador has its own interest due to its geopolitical position and being located in the middle of the globe and benefiting from preferred ports in the Pacific Ocean due to several factors. And in addition, it is considered a key country for the new geostrategic arrangement and the hemisphere proposed by the United States. Therefore, the changes that have been taking place in Ecuador since 6 years ago, as I mentioned earlier, have a close relationship with the alignment of foreign policy with U.S. strategy and geostrategy. There are several examples in recent years. For example, the U.S. Senate approved the law related to the government of Ecuador, which is called the Cooperation Act between the United States and Ecuador, a law to rule another country. The United States passed a law for Ecuador that covers all areas of life in our country, not only international relations, but also geopolitical order, security, defense, political management, and others. This is an important precedent. This law was passed in December 2022. Then during this process, we saw a diplomatic, or as you said, a military offensive, Southern Command. And what happened a few days ago in Ecuador are examples of this. Therefore, here we see the deployment of military force, which is against the Constitution, because the Constitution has introduced Ecuador as a country of peace without the presence of military bases and military aggression, especially foreign bases. Even in national definitions, the culture of peace is emphasized. Now, in such a country, a very detailed military cooperation agreement is signed. With the military agreement between the United States and Ecuador in October, there is no more talk of one, two, or three military bases. It's about handing the country over to intelligence operations and diplomatic exercises. In this agreement, it's guaranteed that all operations, personnel, intelligence services, etc., will have diplomatic immunity and will be subject to American laws, despite the fact that they're in Ecuador. It is difficult for me to explain this issue because it is both in the approved law, which we mention as an unprecedented case, that a law is approved in the United States to govern Ecuador, and in the military agreements, because this is not the first agreement. It is said that they're conducting an experiment of a new type of American protectorate, which bypasses the country's laws, constitution, and international agreement in this model in order to direct the country to another destination and another role, which is within the framework of foreign geostrategic design. So that's the path that Ecuador is on. And without a doubt, our recent experience as a country has been a lifetime of chaos. We have the numerous moments of unprecedented, unexpected, and even most unjustified chaos, followed by offers of security. In other words, leaving national sovereignty and becoming a client of private commercial packages of security models like what we currently have in Ecuador. Therefore, what we are witnessing is clearly our concern, because our country, which is defined on the basis of sovereignty, is becoming a protectorate. This is worrying. Another worrying issue is that the country has gone as far as declaring a civil war. That is what the president of Ecuador has announced. He has the military support of the Southern Command, the regime of Israel, and the government of Ukraine. He received a military plane from this country, which is an American aid received this week. This is an international invasion against a Latin American country that includes a declaration by CELAC, Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, which declares the region a land of peace. They brought the country into an unexpected military situation. In fact, numerous riot and violence tactics have been implemented in Ecuador with the aim of offering settlement packages to it.
Aplicaciones de tácticas de violencia y de caos para luego ofrecer también paquetes de solución.
Así es, para ir acercándonos ya al final.
Yes, that's right. What has been the reaction of the Ecuadorian people, the people who have established various movements?
¿Qué pasa con la CONAIE, es decir, con las organizaciones indígenas?
Where is the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador? What about the Federation of Secondary Students of Ecuador? What about the Federation of Students, Trade Unions, National Union of Teachers? I mean, we have witnessed large demonstrations since the past.
¿Ha visto grandes movilizaciones? ¿No? ¿Y qué pasa con las fuerzas democráticas?
What happened to the democratic forces or patriotic forces? In such a difficult situation for Ecuador, what are the conditions of these groups?
Eso puede ser.
This could be a bad example, as you explained, and a path that they set for all of Latin America.
Así es. Mira, creo que estas tácticas de sembrar el caos.
Yes, that's right. I believe that these techniques of developing chaos and intimidation of people, especially in the case of Ecuador, which until recently was known as the axis of peace in the region, will lead people to an unexpected reaction. For example, the fear that is instilled through really effective media work against these threats has an impact on ordinary people and on the economy and on all aspects of life. And without a doubt, it cannot be denied that the people of Ecuador are intimidated. For example, since the declaration of civil war under the heading of terrorism, which targets the smallest common criminal and the biggest leader of drug trafficking, there's been confusion in the country, and people want these issues to be resolved so that they can act more freely. When the country is stopped due to the declaration of this war, we're facing unusual conditions in all fields, and it is clear that society has many questions. Not only experts, but also common sense says that, for the problems that exist in Ecuador, maybe it was possible to solve them with techniques focused on the same issues. Issues such as violent and dangerous acts. It would have been better if we had not declared war across the border and asked for help from the Southern Command and other actors, such as the extreme right-wing government of Argentina, to solve the country's problem. With these talks, the popular and social movement, which is very diverse in our country, was worried and expressed dissatisfaction with the current situation and asked for an explanation. The network of intellectuals defending humanity, the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador, and other institutions have expressed concerns about these conditions, especially because of these declared war conditions. Democratic capabilities are limited.
Se obstruyen las capacidades democráticas.
El tiempo es cruel.
Time is cruel. For this reason, we say goodbye to Irene Leon, who has an excellent and very powerful presence. Thank you, Irene Leon. This is Black and White.
I should always thank the Black and White program. Thank you. See you soon.
Hasta pronto.
See you soon.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge with Sheikh Mukhtar on IRIB English Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide for managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the 53rd letter of Imam Ali alayhi salam, which he wrote to Malik Ashtar, in which he has addressed some of the key points with regards to leadership and governance. And of course, these statements would be helpful for anyone who seeks to understand an Islamic perspective of management, managing affairs, guiding and leading institutes or leading governments, even leading sensitive positions and things like that. So in this, we reach this phrase where Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about certain important things that you are supposed to do with regards to the people who are working in those sensitive positions. One of those things that he said was that ثُمَّ أَسْبِغْ عَلَيْهِمُ الْأَرْزَاقِ, they give them, like pay them well. And I explained what it means by paying well. It doesn't mean overdoing it, nor keep giving them so less that they are forced to, for example, go into some kind of treason and cheating.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, in the previous session, we discussed about the fact that the payment that we give to these people has to be balanced, to these workers, especially government workers that are in high positions, that are in important sensitive positions, that have at their disposal a lot of funding, a lot of budget. These people need to be paid well. But at the same time, we say that the payment, it shouldn't be so humongous in its amount that it should cause, for example, the other people who are working under them to covet that position because of its wealth and to feel that they are not being attended to with regards to their needs. So there has to be some kind of justice and some kind of balance. At the same time, if you are offering a certain amount to a certain position, then another position which is similar to that also has to be offered a similar amount. And the question comes here is that, is do you have enough funds to be able to do all of that? So you need to balance all of this. The key factor is that the amount that you give should be enough for them not to feel that they would require, for example, to cheat from the budget because of their needs. Already you are choosing respectable, good people who are pious. So, of course, for such people, it is, unless you put them under so very much pressure that they would feel like doing that. Or, for example, you do not give them their basic requirements. And apart from those basic requirements, a level of good amount of wealth that they could feel that they can live comfortably without getting worried about other petty issues. So, as I said, the balance is very important, but the payment should be good. Another thing that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions with regards to those people who are in those sensitive positions is that the leader or the ruler has to try his best to, what we call, to follow up on the tasks of the people, of those who are working for him, especially those who that are in the, you can say, middle level leadership positions. He says ثُمَّ تَفَقَّدْ أَعْمَالَهُمْ, and that means to follow up on their tasks.
اللَّهُمَّ صَلِّ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِ مُحَمَّدٍ.
Sayyid Razi, also known as Sharif Razi, a religious scholar and theologian, holds a significant place in Islamic history for his invaluable contribution to the compilation of Imam Ali's profound teachings and speeches, which were later compiled into the influential literary work known as Nahjul Balagha.
Now, Imam Ali says, ثُمَّ تَفَقَّدْ أَعْمَالَهُمْ. That means that inspect or follow up on their tasks, on their works. Now, this is a very important element of good management. You see, sometimes some institutes and some governments can be very good in allocating tasks, meaning that they are very expert in that. Like if you give them the job of allocating tasks, they will do it for you in the most refined manner. But then, at the end of the year, you see majority of those tasks are not fulfilled. Why does that happen? That happens because there is no system of inspection. Number one, there is no good system of follow-up. So tafaqqad here means to follow up properly, to inspect. Why has this not been done after, let's say, 1 year? A deadline has to be kept, and that deadline has to be followed. Deadlines have to be kept, the deadlines have to be followed, reminders have to be kept. And alhamdulillah, in this day and age, we have got the artificial intelligence, we have got applications that can help you automatically follow up, set reminders and, you know, follow up those aims and objectives. For that to happen properly, you need to also have a good system of giving reports. So, if you have a good reporting system, number one, naturally, the follow-up process will also be easier. So these things have to be kept in mind whenever you have an institute, whenever you have a body which you are trying to lead. The people under you, they need to feel the pressure that they are going to be followed up, and that they need to be able to deliver at the right time so that those tasks are performed in the best of manners. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we can take these messages seriously and keep them and apply them in our lives. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar in the program Gate of Knowledge on RIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Now when it comes to our responsibility towards the Ahlul Bayt, if you and I want to raise our children and make ourselves also ideological warriors for the Ahlul Bayt alayhim assalam, it's not something that is achieved by just making one trite prayer. Rather, there's heavy lifting involved. It's not easy to raise a child who will be a soldier of the Imam of the time. One of the things that it entails is that you and I introduce the Ahlul Bayt as they are. We have to introduce the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam as they are. So what we believe about this Imam, Imam al-Askari, is that he is loftier in station, him and all of the members of the Prophet's family, that they are loftier in station than any of Allah's Anbiya, meaning Allah's great prophets, His noble prophets. And you and I, again, we have no idea how wonderful they are, how close they are to God. We hear stories about Nabi Nuh. But what was it like? How close was he to God that God gave him that ark? We have no idea. The station of Nabi Musa, Kalimullah, he spoke to God, communion with God. Again, we have no idea how wonderful the station of Nabi Musa. Same goes for Nabi Isa, born without a father, curing the blind, the leper. All of these great prophets, we have no idea of their station. What we do say is this: as great as they were, and we humans have no way of fathoming how great they were, they were not like Ahlul Bayt. They weren't at the same status as Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Our prophets used to ask God to be with and to join Ahlul Bayt. I want to mention two stories, again, just for us to understand a little bit about the station of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam and the station of our own Imam, Imam al-Askari. So, Nabi Yusuf in the Quran, after he achieves the final victory, after he has now been reunited with his brothers, he's over there, he's been established in the land. At that stage, he asks God for some beautiful du'as. One of them, in Surah Yusuf, this is verse number 101, 12-101. Yusuf says, وَأَلْحِقْنِي بِالصَّالِحِينَ. God, make me join those righteous, the salihin. Make me join them. In the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doesn't provide a response to his dua. There's another prophet, Nabi Ibrahim, exact same dua, وَأَلْحِقْنِي بِالصَّالِحِينَ. For Nabi Ibrahim, who you and I remember, was made an imam. He was made an imam. For him also, when he made this dua, what does God tell him? This is now in Surah Baqarah 130. God says this: he did get that request answered in the hereafter. It says, وَلَقَدْ اسْتَفَيْنَاهُ فِي الدُّنْيَا. Yes, we chose him in this world. وَإِنَّهُ فِي الْآخِرَةِ. In the akhirah. He did, was able to join Ahlul Bayt. The Ahlul Bayt is something else. No Nabi, excluding our Prophet, is at their station. They were excluded from, or exempted from prostrating before Adam. In the Quran, Allah has a conversation. Shaitan speaks to God. God tells him to prostrate before Adam. He rejects God. When he rejects God, God says, why? And he says these words. God is now speaking to him. This is Surah Sa'd, Surah 38, verse number 75. Astakbarta? Is it that you were arrogant? Am kunta min al-'alin? Or is it that, no, actually you're one of the exalted ones. The exalted ones were exempted. Are you one of the 'alin? Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam were created 2,000 years before Adam. It is through their worship that the malaika learned to worship. So, again, no comparison to them. And this position that we have, that the Ahlul Bayt are higher in station than even the Anbiya, is something which is supported by the Ahadith, the Sunnah of our Prophet. Once, marhum Ayatullah Fatimi Niyah, marhum, was asked a question. He was in Ashriya, and one of our Sunni brothers approached him, and he said, is it true that you believe the station of the Ahlul Bayt is loftier than that, even of the great Anbiya? He said, but we all believe that. It's not just us who believe that. We all believe that. And he quoted a hadith, reliable hadith, from the books of our Sunni brothers. Our Prophet is speaking. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He says, our Prophet speaking, Atani malakun, an angel came to me. Faqala ya Muhammad, he spoke to me, he said, O Muhammad, Salman arsalna qablaka min rusulina ala ma bu'ithu. Ask those prophets who were sent before you, what was the condition for them embracing this mission? There was a condition. There was something they had to embrace before they were allowed to be sent by God. What was that condition? The Prophet asked what the condition was. Qultu ala ma bu'ithu. What was the condition they were sent on? And the angel responded, Qal ala wilayatika wa wilayati Ali ibn Abi Talib. The condition for them becoming anbiya, prophets, was that they embrace your wilaya and the wilaya of Ali ibn Abi Talib. Now, that's one part of our mission, reading Ziyarah Jami'a, which has been recommended by the 12th Imam. There's another job that we had. I mentioned that being and raising the generation of the soldiers of the Imam is not an easy task. There is heavy lifting involved. One part that we also have to do is to introduce the contributions of the Ahlul Bayt. The strategy of the Ahlul Bayt, the contemporaries of the Ahlul Bayt. Why is it that you and I, now you, and speaking as a mother or as a father, when you're introducing Imam Al-Askari, and you want to introduce his jihad, and what he did for us, and how severe the taqiyya was at the time of Imam Al-Askari, how the taqiyya of Imam Al-Askari, because he's leading the resistance, led to punishing the enemy. You want to be able to explain that? There are some books, and I've recommended one of them before, The Lives of the 12. Brothers and sisters, inshallah, if they can read that fourth volume, that would give us some detail. I'd like to introduce a new book for brothers and sisters to also read, and that is this book, which is called Imam Hussein's Brothers in Arms. Imam Hussein's Brothers in Arms. This is another way, I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, if you look at this, you'll have a different appreciation for Imam Al-Askari. When you hear what taqiyya is, correct taqiyya, how he applied it, Imam Al-Askari. Under what conditions did he struggle? Obviously, the appreciation will be a lot greater. Now,
you're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Ali Muhali Hakim Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
سيوتو Çömen. Yani?
Bazaar.
It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions, Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet, despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy. Hello there, and welcome to the second segment in our two-part edition of Bazaar. Last week, we discussed the knowledge-based production of potatoes in agriculture and how technology has helped expand this sector. This week, the program focuses on livestock rearing and all that goes into producing high-quality meat and dairy. Yum, yum. So stay with us as we check out their economic and national food security contributions. Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep. This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit. And as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit, and the milk produced is rigorously tested. Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs. Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company. Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future. It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products. ...2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity.
the ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Center, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns and profit. Khorasan Razavi province specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechi, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini-tubers. So what is a mini-tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production. You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a soilless system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production. As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us. After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received three consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production. This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress. As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products. The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and national economy. Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs one-fifth of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same two-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are two of the major culprits of reduced production. Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons. However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian. It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-gray zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their end use. In short, these items are produced when purified zinc vapors are condensed. But this requires a large amount of processing, starting with melting zinc crucibles. Next, the molten zinc is transferred to a vaporizing furnace.
The vapors are then sent to a condenser to form zinc dust by circulating the gas through a cyclone cooler. Most zinc dust production plants include a vertical crucible melting and vaporizing furnace and a condenser, which operate on a fluid and continuous basis. That's why this production company works around the clock without breaks. Now you might be wondering where zinc powder is used. Due to its unique characteristics, it is a sacrificing element that helps prevent corrosion, meaning it works well in absorbing moisture and strengthening metal surfaces against oxidation. It is a perfect substance for coating industrial machines that withstand harsh climatic conditions.
So many processes are at work when it comes to mining. There is exploration, extraction, and refining of raw material, just to name a few. But activities don't end there. Usually, there are mega holding companies in the mining sector with several subsidiaries, such as the company we just mentioned. These subsidiaries are essential in expanding and completing mining-based products' supply chains.
An asset to corporations is their research and development departments. This is because they carry out activities leading to technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones while elevating the company's industrial standing. This department also performs critical quality control checks where standards are also implemented. And indeed, standards are everything, especially for foreign trade. One of this company's competitive advantages is its high purity products based on national and international needs. This company also purchases most of its raw materials from domestic suppliers. Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future. It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs.
Well, I'm going to go into a several-minute silence because my good friend and colleague is out there on the field to give you guys a wonderful report. Take it away.
In a world grappling with coronavirus, a significant number of health-related companies have been looking for a solution to contain the spread of the virus. With the development of various testing methods, there has been a huge spike in demand for the virus sampling kits, and especially the sampling swabs.
God, I'm just so very tired of wearing masks. But what can I say? Ever since the pandemic took the world by storm, our life has changed in an unpredictable way. One of the prominent changes is the development of sampling technology to meet the evolving need of COVID-19 testing. Today, we came to Damahi Biotechnology Company to see how the sampling swabs that we see everywhere are produced. So don't go anywhere, stay with me.
At the start of the outbreak, most of the sampling swabs were imported into the country and the domestic supply chain had been inconsistent. For this reason, this Iranian company in biotechnology decided to take steps towards promoting local sampling swabs on a large scale. When it comes to production, the swabs are produced in two different forms: oral swabs and nasal swabs. Anyway, let's take a look at the production line.
Alright, the production process of the sampling swabs begins in this unit. At this stage, after the plastic handles are imported into this factory, they go through the swab flocking machine to form the header. Actually, when I look at it, it kind of looks like the ear cleaning swabs that we use on a day-to-day basis. But in fact, they are completely different. These headers are actually made of fibers, so it's totally something else. When the swabs are produced, they get to this stage for quality control and cleaning before they get to the packing hall. And finally, they pass through the sealer machine for pressing. But I should mention that the swabs are not final.